Transmission commence in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Level 7.
RandomChatter.com presents
the Strategic Homeland Intervention Enforcement and Logistics Division.
Do you copy?
Perimeter breach.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case files.
Authorizing.
Just call us S.H.I.E.L.D.
Access granted.
Colson, get back to base.
Welcome back, agents. I trust you've all been suitably briefed on our most recent encounter. We'll be your hosts on Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files this week. I'm Director Shepard.
And I'm Special Agent Luby.
And you've been authorized to undergo debriefing on the most recent mission from Agent Coulson and his operatives. Presented to the public as a dramatic hour-long television series known as Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Fortunately, you have all been cleared to know the truth. While Agent Stolte is out on field ops this week, I'd like to welcome our special guest, Special Agent Luby, to the podcast. Chris, welcome.
Hey, thank you so much. Yeah, I've been in the field as well, so this is kind of a coincidence coming in while Josh is out on assignment. But it's a pleasure to be here. Been catching up and keeping on top of all the recent events going on with the show and everything like that, and excited to talk about this episode.
So you've been watching the series since the start.
Oh yes, very eagerly anticipated. You know, all of the lead up. I mean, ever since Avengers and then the announcement that the show was coming up, you know, just kind of following every rumor and everything. You know, being a big fan of Joss and everything he's done in television, mostly with Firefly. You know, just really excited to see a show again about a group of people who are all different, living aboard a ship again.
Yeah,
conveniently that has a large cargo hold that has two levels and a nice staircase. It's something I've been really excited to catch every week. It's one of the only shows that I kind of, it's appointment television. That's 7 o'clock. It's ABC, and I'm right there in front of the TV. It's not DVR.
Yeah.
It's as it happens. You know,
that's great.
So, really excited.
And you just did our entire Firefly S.H.I.E.L.D. crossover episode there, so that's great.
There you go. Yeah, if you ever do a detailed breakdown of that, I would love to be a part of that. But this week we are investigating season 1, episode 4, I Spy. It originally aired on October 15th, 2013. It was written by Jeffrey Bell, directed by Roxanne Dawson. You might know her as B'Elanna Torres from Star Trek Voyager. She's done a bunch of other directing as well.
I noticed that. Yeah, I hadn't really looked into her, and then I saw she'd also directed some Lost, some Heroes. She did Under the Dome, some of the Under
Melrose
the Dome.
Place. Don't forget Melrose Place.
Really?
Yeah, wow. Yeah. Yeah, she's a diverse directing portfolio, if you will. So this episode is here's kind of a breakdown, a debrief. While investigating a theft of diamonds in Europe, Coulson and the team track down Akila Amandor, a former protege of Coulson's, who is behind a string of robberies. While she's doing all of this, it's like, who is she working for? What's the deal with her? Does she have ESP? What's going on? That's what the team has to discover in this episode.
Very exciting episode, and we'll get into some discussion on it here. But let me just give a little bit of brief news. We covered last week that they have agreed to do a full season for this, so they are busily working on episodes.
Yes.
But I think in order to allow them to get a little lead time on this, October 29th, they are going to air a repeat of the pilot. So there will be one more episode, the fifth episode here called The Girl with the Flower Dress, coming next week. And then we will have a week off unless you want to watch the pilot again, which I'm sure they will count that towards the initial, whatever it was, 22 million ratings.
And something insane. This will be the third time it's aired.
Correct.
It also re-aired, I guess, the Thursday after
it showed.
Yeah. Yep.
Right. And then they'll be back on November 5th with episode number 6, which is called
which is the sound of being shocked something.
Now, the one thing that I was talking to somebody and they said, hey, what's that episode about? And I said, well, it's about, you know, they find some dead bodies in the floating in the water. And then I thought for a second, I said, you know what? I'm remembering from the news release on that, or the press release, I don't think they mentioned water. I think they just said floating bodies. So
that's interesting.
So I have no idea what they're planning to do with that. So.
Right. And they're not, you know, releasing a bunch of spoilery stuff. I mean, they're only really showing what's going to happen next week, and then it's all speculation.
Yeah.
And especially with a title like FZZT, which, you know, is it's a sound. It's not a word. It's all up for fan speculation. It's sort of like if they were to call this one like, you know, whatever the Wolverine sound, the snick or whatever,
snicked. Yeah,
snicked. You know, we would have a good idea. But this is, I don't think I recall.
Well, that's onomatopoeia at its finest, or you know, the sound effects is written in Marvel Comics. You know, a foom, yeah, bam, bim, biff, pow, that kind of stuff. So
yeah,
but let's get into I Spy here, which. I will say, I hope this shuts a lot of people up. I over the last week, I've just been seeing a lot of belly aching on the internet and people, you know, oh, I can't believe this show and oh, it's horrible and yawn and, you know, I mean, just really non-constructive kind of stuff. I agree, and I think Josh and I have talked about this, that the pilot was a really good episode. And obviously high, high quality, had a lot of lead in, you know, got a lot of people interested in it. You broke, you know, big records. Second episode, not so great. 084, you know, while it laid some groundwork, I think, for the series overall, it wasn't fabulous. But the asset last week was better. And I got to say, I Spy, I think we're back right up on par with the pilot here. I mean, this was a great episode.
Yeah.
I don't know what your overall impressions were just off the bat.
I feel like we're pretty in sync with that. One of the one of my critiques of those first, you know, even the asset for me was that, as expected and as I've seen, you know, before in like say Firefly, the you know, the pilot's really good, except for you know, Firefly, they didn't show the pilot, but anyways,
yeah, out of order.
it's almost necessary for a show about a bunch of people who don't necessarily all get along or have different backgrounds. You've got to tell us why they need to work together. And I tweeted this as the show was going on. It's like, finally, we're seeing the team work together almost, you know, as a team. We're almost mm-hmm. there. This was the most, this felt a lot like the pilot in the sense that it was very international, that, you know, while obviously they didn't.
Oh yeah.
You know, the stuff with Coulson and stuff, that was, you know, some backlot somewhere in Los Angeles, I'm sure. But the, you know, the second unit shots in Sweden and the subway stuff, that felt very international. It felt expensive.
It was, yeah, you know? It was surprising. I mean, when I saw the opening, I'm like, wow, how are they getting away with this? And then I, you know, I did some Google searching of the whatever the Sergies Square in Sweden. And I'm like, wow, that's where they were. They were shooting there.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And so, I mean, for a show like this to, you know, to have that feel, as I feel really important for, any show about a, you know, a worldwide, organization that's trying to keep down galactic and other issues from affecting Earth's people, that the show needs to feel like they can go anywhere and everywhere. And, I really felt like they pulled it off. We're definitely getting into a groove, you know, with the team and where they are.
Yeah. This was a really big team show, but before we get into that, I want to kind of go back to the, it seems this is kind of the topic of the show, the one of the main topics of the show. It's hey, did you notice that Coulson laid down some more, notes about, oh, maybe he is not really Coulson, you know, and other things that pique people's interest, say, oh, he's an LMD. He's been healed by magic, as we've been doing over the past couple of weeks. I'm going to just say he's a zombie. I think he's the mutant enemy, right? The Gur-Arg guy from the end.
That's a stretch. That's a stretch, Jerry.
That is a lot. But there were a couple things I saw this week, or I heard this week. One was I mean, they feel so obvious to me, at least. Mm-hmm. I don't know. And I think that, overall with the writing, some of that foreshadowing stuff we've seen in the past couple weeks have been really obvious. Like, oh, hey, you know, and they say something at the beginning of the episode and you know that's coming back at the end. And all these little Coulson phrases and stuff he says about Tahiti being a magical place, and mm-hmm. he feels a little rusty about his muscle memory and stuff
memory,
like that.
Yeah.
So, this week, the thing that I think was very obvious was, you know, at the end when Akilo was leaving the bus and was talking to Melinda May, she said, "What did they do to him?" Or she, yeah. I guess she asked about Coulson to start with, and May started saying, "Well, you know, he's been through a lot after the Battle of New York," and she's like, "No, what did they do to him?"
Right, and then May's like, "What do you mean?" And then she's like, "Never mind."
So, yeah, and I think, you know, May, throughout this episode, has seemed concerned enough about Coulson. I mean, she is going to protect him whatever it takes, you know, and she's a team player, even though she doesn't necessarily agree with, you know, what his assessment of the mission might be, as we see in this. So that'll be an interesting thing to see how it plays out, because now, you know, her curiosity may be piqued by the whole comment from Akilah. But the other thing I heard, this was I caught this in my second viewing with my my family earlier in the day here. Coulson is talking to the team about, you know, we've got to find a way to do this. And, you know, it's like, oh, it's kind of in the box. And he's like, I live outside the box.
Yes. Yes.
And I don't know, for me,
it was a phrase that also caught my interest. I wasn't sure exactly what to think about that, though.
So my thought is that, well, what do you put in a box? You can put all sorts of things in a box, but bodies go in a box, right, to get buried. And, you know, and he ostensibly died, but now he is living outside the box, outside the coffin. I mean, you know, maybe this is a stretch, but hey, I have a background in film critique and criticism, so I do these kind of weird connections.
Well, no, but I think you're right, and it's also something that you pointed out about some of the writing and some of the – there are some obvious – there are some things that it feels like the writers threw out to kind of make you think – what they want you to think, like, you know, everybody at first with Coulson, it was all about, oh, he's a life model decoy,
right?
Because of the reference in Avengers, and then they followed it up with some, you know, some kind of, you know, references to that possibility, and to get fans on that thinking that, you know, oh, he's an LMD, and then so that whenever they finally get around to telling us, you know, what happened, they could hit us with something we didn't see coming.
I hope that is what it would be, because I hate to feel, and, you know, you being a fan of Joss Whedon's work, I am as well. He likes to lead you along the path that he wants you to see, and then he whips something out from, you know, right outside your field of vision. Usually it's a character death, but
it's a giant Reaver spear through the heart, you know?
But you know, that's, I can appreciate him, you know, leading people this way. And of course, you know, you've got people that are watching the show that don't read Marvel comics. They don't know any of this stuff. Like, they're like, oh, okay, well, he came back to life, and they are probably not paying attention to a lot of these sort of, you know, phrases and sayings and stuff like that.
Absolutely. And actually, case in point, kind of a friend of mine who is not a comic book reader at all, just, you know, likes the movies and stuff.
Yeah.
After the episode aired, got a Facebook message that said, is Coulson a robot? And I had to go off and say, well, I don't think this, but this is why he could be, and, you know, all of this stuff. But I think they are, in a way, leading us on, because the LMD explanation is the most obvious of it.
Right.
You know, and also, you know, to even bring up robots again, Sky in that, you know, early on in the show looks to Ward and says, you know, something about, you know, are you a robot?
Yeah, she it was something about feeling or something like that. And she goes, you're a robot. What would you do? Or something like that. So,
yeah, that also caught my eye. I was like, okay, they're bringing up, you know, the possible, you know, obviously she's joking, but
what I think would be funny, of course, is,
Oh,
Coulson's fine. Yeah, he really did just get, you know, he really healed himself in some fashion, and Ward is the LMD.
Which would make sense. He's kind of a, you know, he's a rogue kind of guy.
That's true. He is
on his own.
Right, on his own, yeah.
He's a bit of a superhero. He can do things he can, you know, that nobody else can do.
Yeah.
That would definitely be a twist. You know, maybe it was that he died for 8 seconds and medical showed up on the helicarrier and patched him up, and, you know, Nick Fury just kept it a secret. You know, it's not that far-fetched, really.
No, I mean, and as I've said before, I always knew something weird was going on in that scene. It's just, you know, you don't know what. But, yeah, I mean, an LMD, a life model decoy, is probably the one of the best answers. Also considering that if you go and pick up the first appearance of S.H.I.E.L.D., the page one, Nick Fury's being cast to have an LMD made of him, or multiple LMDs. So, I mean, like, it's right there at the very beginning of the history of S.H.I.E.L.D. Stan Lee and Jack Kirby came up with this idea. So, you know, that is probably the best explanation.
Yeah.
But, you know, just they're hitting it over the head too much, I think.
Yeah, and I would also assume that in future episodes there'll be some sort of, you know, somebody did something bad, but it you know, it wasn't them. It was some sort of, you know, life model decoy that actually did the crime. Yeah. And that's an inevitable episode. If we're ever going to see any sort of payoff with an LMD, they're going to have to do a whole episode that explains, you know, what the heck this thing is.
You're right. So, yeah, they're going to have to introduce it in a proper way before they can make any sort of story commentary with it. The thing that I hope they don't do with it, that's happened with the LMDs in the comic books. There were two series in the 90s, Nick Fury versus S.H.I.E.L.D., where he kind of goes rogue because there's some weird stuff going on. I think Hydra's coming back or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then they started a second volume of Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., which ran like 40-some issues. Well, the miniseries that came after both of those basically said, you know, the events in those two titles really didn't happen the way you thought they did. It was a bunch of LMDs because S.H.I.E.L.D. put all these characters in as LMDs to try to distract Nick Fury while some other stuff was being done and Hydra was coming back. But, you know, they didn't want Nick to be involved with that for whatever reason. So, you know, it's used as a cheat in that case.
Right. I hope that's not the case. If it's going to be used, it needs to be used cleverly. And I think if anybody's going to pull it off, it'll be one of those episodes that, you know, that either Joss has a hand in or is as definitely as executive producer kind of guiding it to be used in a creative way.
I just mentioned Nick Fury. How about this? I'd love to see Xander show up in the show from Buffy with his eye patch on.
That would be cool.
Whatever the actor's name is, I don't know. Brandon, it doesn't something.
It's not coming to mind.
Anyway, so the other thing that I thought worked really well for this episode was the team. They are really starting to gel. The last few episodes have been individual centric episodes with team peripheral.
Right.
You know, so Sky had last episode, and the one before that was kind of Agent Ward's. First off, what have your thoughts been on the team dynamics?
Sure.
You know, obviously, since we haven't talked to you about the previous shows.
Absolutely. Well, you know, as far as the team as a whole, we're almost there. We're almost at a point where everybody sees the main mission, but you know, like why they're together and what they're trying to accomplish. Part of the reason why I don't think that they're all the way gelled is because we haven't got to a why they have to be together. Like in the Avengers, there was a reason why they had to band together. And it wasn't really until that point. I think that, you know, we got some stuff here in this episode we'll talk about later, I'm sure, that will get us there. I really like Ward. You know, again, he's not really all that terribly interesting. He's kind of just an agent that can do things and can get stuff done. He's by the books. He's not my favorite character, but he needs to be a part of this show. You got Sky, who's growing on me. I really didn't like her that much in the first episode.
Really?
It was just something about that super hacker that, you know, isn't. Those people don't really exist, you know, and so it's hard to write that kind of a character based on something that doesn't really exist, that you can quickly type something on your computer and all of a sudden hack into something. Those are comic book type, you know, tropes, and you don't see they don't exist in real life.
Up a character, you know, on a brand new show, you kind of have to give everybody has to have just kind of an assignment, right? She's a super hacker. This is the biotechnologist. This is the physicist, you know, but you haven't seen anything that makes you go, okay, so this is how they are. But how do you feel about Sky's like the banter, the wittiness, the snarkiness?
Now, I do like that now. I think it was up until this episode, and a little bit of the asset as well. But this episode, when she walks into Coulson's office and is like, "Hey, I just want to give you a quick update," she's still at the hotel. And that's the update.
Yeah.
And, you know, and little stuff like that. I think her snark was a little over the top in the first episode or so. But now I feel like she's fitting in. And the moment that she had with Coulson in that office about, you know, you're the first person to see value in me, and really kind of, in a way, kind of cracking her walls down a little, you know, breaking them down and letting us see a little bit about what it is to, you know, be, you know, who she is,
right?
And her background. I think that's fleshed her out a bit more.
And it's validating some of the stuff that Josh and I have been talking about with Coulson over the past few weeks, where, you know, he seems to see, he sees beyond, he sees the value in these people and the value of these people as a team and the way that they can interact before they do,
right.
You know, and trust them to do what is right and what is necessary at the time, even before, you know, they realize that that's what they need to do.
Exactly.
Cool. So
yeah, and I'm on board with what the internet thinks. Fitz and Simmons are my favorite characters.
Yeah.
Hang
on a second before we get off to Fitz and Simmons. Let me just ask you one other question about Sky.
Sure.
End of 084 with her little text back to the Rising Tide, and then in the asset, her kind of turn where you thought she was betraying S.H.I.E.L.D., but she was using it to her advantage and, you know, kind of using her sex appeal and everything to actually infiltrate and to, you know, give him a secret to allow him to trust her, and then just turn the tables on the Ian Quinn. Is that whole thing done? Is there still potential double agency?
I think something's going to happen. She's still tied in with Rising Tide. They still have something on her. They have something that they will exploit later on that we don't know. They're putting pieces into play. We saw that with the end of the asset, the little stinger there. You know, stuff in this episode makes us, you know, leads us to believe, you know, who's behind the scenes. And so there's something Rising Tide has on her that she is somehow tied to. They're going to hold something over her head, or something that is going to require her to make a very difficult decision.
Okay.
I feel like there's no reason for her to text them back.
Right.
You know, she could have had that moment where she looked at her phone and then thought about it and then just turned it off and put it in her pocket.
Sure. Yeah. It seemed like a pretty quick turn, you know, if it was. So I agree. I think that there is something else in mind.
Absolutely.
And, you know, like, you know, we're saying they're getting into their groove now. So, you know, we can explore this more as, you know, we go on. So,
right. And she still brings up Rising Tide. She mentions that when they're breaking into the signal, she says, I may have some Rising Tide exploits. And she tells Fitz to mirror the image over onto her computer.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So they're keeping the Rising Tide, you know, visible in the show. So, right. Yeah, I think there's something there.
Okay. But Fitzsimmons, you like him a lot. Yep.
They're awesome. I mean, the whole internet, you know, especially Tumblr, is all, you know, on board the shipping between the two of them.
Already.
Four
episodes in, we got shippers.
But clearly Fitz has got something for Sky. But but there's a cool chemistry between the two of them. There's they're fun. They're the, you know,
they have the answers.
Yeah,
I mean, that's
what's
cool is they know everything that, you know, that needs to get done. They have all the tech. They have the cool weapons. They are like the nerdy version of Q from Skyfall. You know,
yeah,
mixed
they
with,
are.
You know, there's some sex appeal, I think, with
it's kind of it's yeah, it's fun that you brought up, you know, the Q, because in a way it's that they're just two separate. They took that character and kind of split it up into two individuals,
right?
You know, who are young and enthusiastic and passionate, and eventually, you know, there will be that Fitzsimmons episode where they have to rely on their own, you know, that, you know, to prove themselves in a different way.
Right. Cause they keep getting stuck out in the field and, you know, failing, because they don't have the skills to survive. I mean, it's, you know, it's, they've been very fortunate to, you know, only get run into by a van, and this one, you know, they were protected, mm-hmm. and, you know, nobody was coming after them with a gun or anything like that, like in 084. So.
Sure. Yeah. There's going to be that episode. And I'm looking forward to that. They're big, I'm a big fan of the two of them. Now, May is the one character that I love, and then I'm kind of confused by where she is, because you know, we obviously know there's a backstory,
right.
And something traumatic that happened that's caused her to be kind of the way she is, and her little venture to the hotel to
yes.
confront a kid, you know, that surprised me, because that felt very un-team player, that her job was, you know, for someone I feel is very by the book,
mm-hmm.
And all of that, and following the rules, she was very impulsive, and took on, you know, something that could have possibly been a very bad decision.
Well, let's look at it this way. So as I mentioned earlier, it seems like she's when she says this seems like a weird assignment for S.H.I.E.L.D. to put us on. And Coulson says, you know, this is my call. This is my mission. So she's like, you know, she's kind of like something's up here. But, you know, he's like, is that a problem? She's like, nope, absolutely not, because she is a team player. And she, as she says, she always has Coulson's back. But that is an interesting point you bring up. You know, she kind of goes rogue. I mean, she pulls like a Ward, right? She has to go off on her own to take care of this. Now, is she doing it because she's that much of a team player that she feels that she needs to protect the rest of the team because she sees this is very dangerous? And she, you know, I think she was probably going to kill Akila at that point, you know, not knowing what the, you know, what the whole story was. And obviously Coulson comes in and saves her, but maybe this plays into her backstory, which is she's such, you know, she's a team player, but then she ends up taking these really odd risks or getting herself into some very strange, you know,
that is an interesting train of thought, because I wasn't thinking about it in that way, like with her past, and possibly maybe there's a situation in her past where she didn't do something impulsive, or she didn't do something and she did maybe she did something at the right time, and that cost the lives of somebody else, and she doesn't want that to happen to her team, so she's, you know, gonna go in here and take care of this herself with the risk of you know, her being sacrificed, you know, for the rest of the team,
right? I hope, you know, and I know that you know, there's the whole Joss Whedon always has to kill off the beloved character in the in the series, so if he does, I hope he. Yeah, I know. I hope he holds off for a couple seasons at least. But what I thought was fun about this episode is the characters are starting to refer to other characters. Well, at least Skye is, right? She's kind of our surrogate, I feel, right? She's the voice or the experience of the viewer, because she's new to the team, we're new to the team, and everything like that. So she talks about when she's talking to Coulson, she says, you know, it's no worse than, you know, hearing mom and dad argue downstairs, which is funny, you know. So you've got the four younger characters, Ward, Fitzsimmons, and Skye, and then May and Coulson, you know, they're in their you know, mid to late 40s or something like that. So, you know, you kind of see them as these parental figures, which I thought was kind of fun. Skye also using the term, she calls Coulson Phil, and he says, don't do that. And then she calls him AC.
All right, AC, because you're cool.
Yeah. Son of cool.
Yeah, that was
Thor reversed to him.
That was a, you know, again, that calls back to, you know, the scene with Skye and Coulson. The team is getting along, which I like to see now.
Yeah.
That before it was sort of like they can't stand each other. They don't like, and it just, that kind of stuff. It is sort of like watching mom and dad fight. It's uncomfortable.
Right.
I don't like watching my superhero teams argue and bicker, you know, again, like in the Avengers, when they're all arguing and Cap is, you know, confronting Iron Man on the helicarrier. And that whole scene's uncomfortable for me, 'cause I'm like, you guys,
right.
Can you just be friends, guys? You know, you guys are superheroes, you know, like
but that's the whole trope, right? You know, you've got, we all have such big egos. We all can't get along. Oh, wait a second. Yes, we can. We're friends. We should be friends.
Oh, we are definitely on a character standpoint, the team is getting together and getting along. They seem to enjoy their company a lot better. They feel more comfortable around each other.
Well, and Ward and Skye are getting along really well. I thought the banter between them when they were breaking into the whatever the company, the building that he was in, getting into in Belarus, where she's going to pull the wire off his glasses and he's all tickly. And stuff.
Yeah, that was really funny. I think that whole sequence, getting towards that place when Akila gets captured and they've got her in the hold, and Coulson and her are kind of catching up and explaining kind of what's going on. That whole scene of Skye looking out for Ward in a way that Ward can't. Mm-hmm. And I felt like that was a really cool thing. It's sort of a change where Ward's not watching out for Skye necessarily as much, and then
she's still the voice in his ear this time and everything like that.
So. Exactly, it's a complete reversal. And whatever that building was, whatever factory, what was it? That's still I don't understand.
Yeah, it's so what it appears to be was this, you know, this factory where something's going on, obviously all these people going into this factory, but where the handler, the English man who is the handler, was trying to get Akilah to go was into this, like the heart of it, into this small room where these two scientists were sitting there basically translating something, and they had notes all over the board. So when we'll get into that here in just a little bit, but you know, obviously, you know, it's not important to necessarily at this point know, I guess, what the, you know, what the company was and stuff, because it's a Russian company or Belarusian.
Belarusian, yeah. But the funniest part of this episode, at least up to this point, is when he rounds the corner and it says, you know, what target confirmed, and yep, you know, please wait, and you're in your head kind of guessing along with Ward, you know, is it going to be, you know, knock this guy out, kill him or whatever, and then the next order shows up and then goes to credits, goes to commercials,
yeah,
and just you're just laughing through the first half of that commercial break, just like, what are they going to do when we come back?
Well, of course, because he says, you know, whatever it is, I got it taken care of. And then it says, you know, seduce him. And he's like, help.
Help.
And it ends with him, help. And then it comes back in exactly the same moment that you left. And she's like, well, wait a second. Didn't you just tell me you didn't, you know, need any help? What happened? He's like, well, you know.
Yeah, talk sports, you know. And he goes in and, you know, Ward showing us another one of his skills, you know, speaking Russian right there.
Yeah.
You know, pretty convincingly. The guy doesn't seem to 100% know what this guy's doing. You know, he's probably catching on. He's like, this accent's really bad.
Yeah.
And eventually, you know, he doesn't get his way. Does not seduce him.
Yeah. Has to knock him out and just go from there. Play it by ear, as it were.
Yes.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, and then I know we're going to talk about this, you know, in a little bit, but that room is so bizarre just for the fact that two guys at a typewriter, like, why did they need to be there? It was so bizarre.
Well, see, they type on the typewriter and then the typing appears in the alternate universe.
Yeah. See, that's why you do this show, Jay. So you can inform me.
Well, I'm just pulling from Fringe.
They're
now.
Cosmic typewriters.
Yeah, typewriters. But, you know, Fringe had the same kind of thing going, just some weird typewriter stuff. So, but one other character trait that I'm seeing through the team that I thought was interesting, and it was done twice in this episode with different characters. It was the same sort of setup for a joke, but it also shows a team dynamic, and I kind of call it, it's like passing the buck, or, you know, everything moving down, or I guess uphill, you know, it's like seeing, you know, who's in charge. Like, so at the beginning of the episode, Ward, who outranks, you know, in basic terms, Fitz, is, you know, they're talking about the night gun again, actually a pistol version of it. The original one was in the pilot and it was like a big rifle. So now we've got a 45 millimeter version, and Fitz is all happy and he's like, and it's the night gun. And Ward's like, no, we're not calling it that. And he's like, yeah, we are. But Ward basically, you know, he's like outranking him and he says, you know, no, that's a stupid name. Later in the episode, Coulson's in the car with all of them, and Melinda May calls in and says, you know, this is bus to short bus, and Ward says, short bus, go.
Yes.
And Coulson's in, like, you know, hey, I got to choose the nicknames from now on, you know, like basically outranking him, and it's just, you know, Ward was able to play down on them, and then Coulson plays down on Ward. I thought it was a really interesting character moment just because it shows the hierarchy of the, you know, who answers to whom on the team and stuff like that, but without having someone say, you know,
hey,
what?
You're, I outrank you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you know, exactly. Something stupid like that. So.
Yeah, precisely. Yeah, that was something I picked up on as well. That was pretty cool.
And while we're talking about the writing, what I find is interesting here. So we've had, there have been three different people that have written, four people that have written the first four episodes in total. The pilot had Joss Whedon and his brother Jed and Jed's wife, Marissa Tencheron, write it. Then the second episode had Marissa and Jed, as well as Jeffrey Bell, who is the sole writer of this episode. And then Marissa and Jed wrote The Asset. And I don't know if the voice that I'm hearing in the first three episodes for Sky is – it sounds very much like other stuff that I've heard that I know that Marissa has written on, like Dr. Horrible Sing-Along blog, for example.
Yeah.
And some stuff on Dollhouse.
Yeah.
So it was very interesting to see one guy, not a team of writers, but a single person writing this episode. Maybe that's why it seemed a little more cohesive.
I agree.
But it, I just feel that, and again, it's the fourth episode in, you know, I think they're finally getting their legs, you know, the writer's room of whatever work they're doing in there, I think is, you know, they're working out. Obviously, Jeffrey Bell didn't write this in a vacuum, you know, there was probably discussion about it, and then he was assigned to write this episode as if, you know, it works in this writer's room like most other TV shows do, where they all, you know, five or six people sit down, they kind of break out the story, and then they choose someone to go ahead and write the episode. So, but I just felt that the writing was smart. They worked characterizations without a lot of extraneous dialogue. They showed, not told. So, you know, the whole thing is show me, don't tell me in film. Mm-hmm. But when they had to tell, like you mentioned, where Akilah is, or Coulson is explaining to Akilah once they've put her in that sort of interrogation room, what they're doing. He's explaining, but they keep cutting back and forth to what Sky and Ward are doing with kind of a voiceover, which
right.
worked beautifully. I thought it was, you know, a really nice way to do the setup for that. And whether that's a writing decision or a directorial decision, you know, it works. So.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that the writing and in the. You mentioned, you know, the singular writer and all that. I do feel like the voice is definitely has been found for the mm-hmm. characters, you know.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So let's get back to kind of the overarching story point for this episode. We'll get back into the room with the chalkboards and stuff here as well. But they are really teasing more of who is going to be the, quote, big bad for this season. And that's kind of a term that Joss Whedon's used in the past on Angel and Buffy to talk about. For the season of this particular show, who is the villain or the, you know, the character or the group or whoever that they have to fight? And at this point, we don't know who that is, but there is some setup. You think by the end of the episode, they're going to reveal, you know, we're going to mm-hmm. get a step closer and we're going to see who is controlling Akilah with this implant. But we find it's just another link in the chain. It's just another person who's being controlled. Nice little
homage
to Mission Impossible 3 there.
Yeah, yeah. And that was a great surprise. I was ready to find out some answers.
Yeah.
Because, you know, for most network television, every episode is a one, you know, mm-hmm. story wrapped up and, you know, it's a one shot. Yep. And when his eye explodes, I was like, okay, yes, this is great.
Yes.
Like that was unexpected. That was exactly what I'm looking for.
That was I think that was the point that like solidified that, okay, this episode, we know where we're going. We can see this, you know, we can't see it clearly, but I see where the season is going ahead of us. We've got mm-hmm. some group, I'm guessing, that is, you know, behind the scenes, they're running around and, you know, all these machinations, interesting things come up. Fitz, I think it was Fitz, who talks about the technology of this bionic eye that Akilah has in.
Yeah.
Is at least a decade beyond what S.H.I.E.L.D. has in terms of capability of technology. Wow. So.
Right. They've picked up a lot of alien tech, you
right.
know, and have been learning from what the Chitauri, you know, dropped, you know, in the Battle of New York. So
yep.
they're ahead of everybody else. And for some group to be 10 years ahead, they've got somebody else, you know, helping them out.
Yeah. So, in previous episodes of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files, I've talked about the fact that I'm really hoping that Hydra comes back.
Mm-hmm.
They were the big villains in the Captain America, the first Avenger film, led by the Red Skull. And it made it sound from the 084 episode that they kind of, you know, disappeared. They kind of disbanded, you know, after the war. But as with, you know, big villainous groups like that, that's probably not the case. But I now, because of the advanced technology stuff that we're seeing, I'm thinking it might also potentially be advanced idea mechanics, which is AIM. And that is
right.
another big villainous group that fights against S.H.I.E.L.D. fans of the Marvel Cinematic Universe will know this from Iron Man 3. That was Killian Aldridge's group that he ran, which they were kind of merging several different kinds of characters and storylines together, because I don't think that character ever has been identified with AIM in the comic books. But, you know, that's fine. They're just bringing in a lot of good ideas, I think, to the Marvel Cinematic Universe from the comics. And I think that's where it's surprising in some ways for good and some ways for bad. Kind of like with the Mandarin from Iron Man 3, I think that was...
That was something. But the thing with Hydra, this is something that I would also like to see. With 084 and the whole, you know, basically that was a Hydra weapon powered by Tesseract, power and all that. Mm-hmm. I think that is probably more likely, because they're a bigger villain. I think with AIM, I think as an audience, we're led to think that because of the events of Iron Man 3, that with the, you know, that's kind of done with. At least that's my impression after that, you know, really feeling like that's over. Then you have the people that were responsible for the pilot episode and the Project Centipede.
Yes.
You've got, you know, the super soldier serum stuff. That's also, you know, linked back to what, you know, Hydra had been trying to work on. And then 084, you got the Hydra device. And then, of course, in April of 2014, we've got Captain America.
Yeah.
And, you know, it doesn't look like, from whatever I've, you know, I don't know if Hydra's at all involved. It looks like it's a completely different thing. But it would be a nice reminder, and impossible if they wanted to, now that they have those back nine episodes ordered, to work in something if they wanted to kind of reveal a little bit. Because I like the idea of Hydra seemingly disbanded, but really they're in hibernation working on something that will eventually, you know, reveal to the world in their plan for domination or whatever their big plan is.
This Death Star.
That came to mind. Yeah. Yeah.
That would be really interesting to see. I would love to see the, because, Thor, the first Thor movie had a lot of S.H.I.E.L.D. elements in it. And then, of course, the first Captain America had a ton of S.H.I.E.L.D. elements. And Thor 2 comes out here in about a month. And like you said, Captain America comes out next April, Captain America 2, the Winter Soldier, comes out next April, which we know is going to have a lot of different S.H.I.E.L.D. elements in it, with Black Widow and, Cap working with S.H.I.E.L.D. at this point, from what we can, you know, hear about on the internet and stuff like that.
Sure.
So it would be really cool to see that sort of stuff interleave into the show. There's also a possibility, and I don't necessarily believe this, but I've seen people talking about online that, you know, it could also be some rogue branch of S.H.I.E.L.D. that had splintered off at some point. This whole technology issue would trouble me with that. If you would think if a group splintered off from somebody else that, you know, they may not have that much more advancement in technology unless they have found something in the meantime to help them, such as, you know, whatever this alien script, and it looks like a circuit diagram, but there's strange glyphs and stuff written on the chalkboard in this secret room as well. So, and it's mentioned as being, what did they call it? I think they
Scroll?
Said it's... Well, I'm just saying in the show they said it looks like it might be a formula, I guess. Or an alien equation. That's what it is.
Gotcha. Yeah, I feel like there's in a way two big powers out there, because you've got the group that's controlling Aquila, who are after what was on the chalkboard, and then you've got the people who have the chalkboard.
Oh, okay.
So
there's
these kind of two groups. You've got one group that's 10 years ahead of S.H.I.E.L.D. because they've got
the people that want the chalkboard.
Right. And then you got the people who have the chalkboard, which would be materials and or at least information that is above what the group that wants that information to be.
Interesting. Now, you know, let me throw this in the mix too while you're talking about all that, because the people that Aquila was working for and want the chalkboard, they were also stealing a lot of diamonds.
Yeah. Now, was that just to bankroll their project, or is that because of a big laser or something?
Laser in quotes, right? Laser.
Right. Laser. Yeah, I don't know. That seems really when she opened that case, I was kind of expecting something else, or
I was expecting alien tech of some kind.
Yeah, yeah, and it's just a case of diamonds, you know.
Well, I like the that you're pointing out the fact that there are these two groups, because, you know, that really never occurred to me. It's like you say, oh, well, you know, they're going and stealing this, but they wouldn't be stealing it from themselves. And that obviously was not a SHIELD, you know, building in any fashion. So,
right. Wait a minute. The diamonds, the reason why they needed the diamonds is because she had to make the deal with the guy to get the cards.
Oh, right. Okay. So it was $30 million to get the card that got her into that secure facility.
Yeah, that totally slipped my mind. I was like, there was a reason for the diamonds. But when I first saw the case and opened, I was like, what do they need diamonds for? Like, who is this lady?
That's true. Okay. Yeah, I was kind of hoping for a laser or something cool like that, too.
That would be awesome. You need $30 million worth of diamonds to focus a laser powerful enough to destroy an entire system.
Yeah. So or to rip through the fabric of dimensions or something like that.
There you go, to bring in some scrolls. You know, that would be another interesting thing is if that alien language is script or whatever, that maybe they're, you know, because they're shapeshifters, right? Like,
right.
Couldn't they be walking among us? We could have like that whole, you know, Cylon kind of mystery. And it's cheap because you don't need to do anything. You can have a guy, you know, and a quick alien, you know, quick CGI flash of something, kind of a mystique kind of a thing. And like, oh, wait a minute, who's this guy?
You don't even have to do that. I mean, like V, you just have someone reach up and, you know, pull off part of the skin on their face or something like that, like the old V television show.
Oh, that's
let
so
me
bad.
Just let me just interrupt here. So for people that don't read the comics and don't know anything about what we're talking about here, the Skrulls are an alien race of green, kind of Vulcan-looking people. They're ugly, but they've got pointed ears and green. They first appeared, I think, in Fantastic Four number 4 or something like that. But they have been a common threat against the Avengers. Also, the Avengers had a storyline called the Kree-Skrull War. The Kree are a humanoid looking species that were basically always fighting the Skrull. Kind of think like the Israelis and the Palestinians. It's always a border dispute, mm-hmm. sort of thing like that. So the Skrulls are shapeshifters. They can look like anybody. Impersonate their clothes and everything like that. The Chitauri are supposed to be kind of an offshoot of the Skrulls. The Chitauri were the bad guys in the Avengers film. And in the multiple universes that they have for Marvel Comics, there is an Ultimate Universe, which is where the Nick Fury looks like Samuel L. Jackson. And in the normal continuity, Nick Fury looks like David Hasselhoff. He's a white dude.
Right.
But the Chitauri are kind of the Skrulls of the Ultimate Universe, and the Skrulls are the Skrulls of the normal universe. So, so there's been talk about whether or not, you know, they would ever appear. And it does look like, from what I've seen of some screen caps of the chalkboard, that there is some alien script, and it matches up with the script that they came up with as a written language for the Secret Invasion comic series from, I want to say it was like 2006, 2007, something like that.
Yeah, sounds right. So. Yeah, it certainly does. And if you look, there's, you know, people online, you know, have posted, you know, the screen caps. And then there's also like, you know, people who have put together what they feel is like a translation, you know, and so...
I saw someone's translation. They said it was like LNNK. It's like they said it was just a bunch of junk, but I haven't looked around much more than that. So
right, but it is interesting though that those symbols aren't just made up on the spot. That they they appear elsewhere,
which is great. You know, I mean, and we live in the world of screen caps and DVRs and mm-hmm. slow motion and you know, digital freeze frames, as opposed to like watching stuff in the 80s when you were freeze framing on your VCR and it was like good luck trying to see what that is. But you know.
That's a disappointment, though, too, that it doesn't say anything. You know, like the alien language on Futurama, that's sort of the fun of, you know, freeze framing and then and translating that. It would have been cool if it said, wow, you guys, you know, if it translated to like, wow, you guys are really good.
Exactly.
You know, or something fun for the fans.
But the fact that they put it in there for fans to be able to find and to be able to say, oh, you know, look what this says or might say, but the fact that, you know, you're able to freeze frame it and say, okay, I don't understand what the rest of this stuff is, but, you know, that's Skrull, and, you know, that's a nice nod to the fans, because they could have just, you know, written a bunch of gobbledygook up there and, you know,
sure,
it wouldn't have mattered, but they took that extra time to, you know, throw this bone in. Again, I think it's probably for the for these kind of discussions, nothing may ever come of the Skrulls. But the fact is, we're spending 5 to 10 minutes here now talking about the possibility of it. So
sure, they may have just said, we need some technical-looking gibberish, and some guy was like, hey, what if we do this? Okay, fine, let's do it.
Sure, sure. I would hope it's more than that, but you know,
too.
We'll see. So I don't know how you feel about needles. And I don't know how you feel about eyeballs, and I don't know how you feel about needles plus eyeballs, but in my book, that is the, like, I'll walk into a den of snakes, I will lay down and have spiders crawl on me or something like that, but you put needles plus eyeballs together in anything, and that is my, that's my kryptonite, man. It's just, ugh.
Hold on while I'm writing this down for the inevitable day where I have to face you in battle.
Oh,
needles,
thanks, Batman.
Plus eyes. Yeah, I was actually kind of surprised they didn't go a little more, like they didn't show it a little more.
They showed it enough for me. I was watching it again. I was just like, all right, just tell me when it's over, everybody.
I guess it doesn't bother me as much. I wear contacts. I'm used to, you know, messing with my eyes, but
I don't,
but when they, but there's definitely, I understand what you're feeling. It definitely is pretty gross.
Yeah.
You know, it's scary enough for me. It's something that's kept me from getting LASIK, you know, mm-hmm. that whole idea of peeling back a layer of my eye to do stuff. No, that does freak me out.
Yeah.
Not a fan of that, but it was a cool scene though. It showed both of their strengths. You've got the biotech and the engineer having to both work together for something. That was nice.
And it was just a funny moment with Fitz, you know, where he's holding this thing delicately because he doesn't want to blow themselves up. And he's like, let me just check with Ward for a second, you know, and Ward's like, cut the wire now. And he's like, she's like, what did he say? And it's like, yeah, he told me what to do, you know, and clip and throws it in the bucket and lets it, you know, pop, which I guess you would think that, you know, it's probably not a huge explosive enough that would, if it would happen in someone's head, you know, like you see with the handler guy, it's going to, you know, it's going to kill you. But I think once outside of the body where it was, it probably wouldn't be much more than like a firecracker or something like that, I would think.
Yeah, they just stuck it like in a Pringles can and they were fine. So.
That's what it looked like. I thought it looked like liquid nitrogen, but I guess that was kind of the smoke from the explosion coming out of the top when they...
I bet it was liquid nitrogen, except that was just the smoke. That was the practical effect of the eyeball blowing up. Yeah, that was an interesting scene. I don't need any more eyeballs and needles. They can move on to something else. Maybe it's something attached to the back of the neck or something next time.
Yeah, yeah.
just pull it off real quick and you're done.
So, any other cool things that really caught your eye or kind of invigorated you about this episode that you want to make a mention?
I liked the spy stuff. I think that's where the show needs to be. Now, I am excited about future episodes and some superhero type, you know, people with some powers, but it was nice to get a very grounded episode that was both sci-fi with the whole backscatter eyeball implant and that whole idea of it, but it was at its core a very straightforward, this is a spy type thing. And what I really liked most about it was that moment where we got to see what Sky's really about and that AC sees the good in his team. The tech and all that stuff. Well, I did notice the one thing, and it does bother me. It's product placement. In the pilot, they had those cool trifold tablets.
Oh yes,
and those are gone, and now they're all walking around with Microsoft Surfaces, and it bugs me every time that happens on a show where the pilot, you know, they don't have any deals yet.
Yeah,
and then all of a sudden, the thing that I liked that was unique, the little tripod. Is gone, and now they've got Surfaces.
Yeah,
I mean that's commercial television for you and all that. But
Arrow does that a lot too. They've got
Lenovo.
She's always using Windows 8 on her Surface tablet to whatever bring down the network grid or something.
So. Like just plug it into the Ethernet. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I too really enjoyed the spy elements for this. Of course, the title of the episode called "I Spy" (EYE), which is a riff on the I Spy, which was a 1965 to 1968 TV series with Robert Culp and Bill Cosby, which was about two tennis pros that were in fact spies for the Pentagon, but their undercover work was that they were just these kind of tennis bums that could go, you know, pretty much anywhere because there's a there's always tennis being played somewhere, but wherever they went, they were also on a mission that they had to work at. So I think that was a good nod, you know, to that kind of series here, as well as, you know, as I mentioned earlier, the kind of had the Mission Impossible style effects, which are homages, which Chris and I, which Josh and I have talked about, you know, in previous episodes.
Sure.
So I think that this is kind of the niche they need to be in, and they need to work from here, from this kind of grounded point to stretch out and, you know, go a little more comic booky some weeks and go a little more sci-fi other weeks and then kind of just come back to the home base and do the spy thing.
Yeah. And also, of course, it's I Spy because the eyeball was the spy.
Exactly.
you know, some on the nose titling, which I enjoyed a lot.
And then just some other references that I saw here. There was discussion about how could this woman, Akilah, be doing this? You know, maybe she has ESP, which they kind of debunked. But the ESP and psychokinesis and things like that are a big part of the Nick Fury comic books. There is actually an Esper's division or an ESP'ers division of S.H.I.E.L.D. that they train people with ESP to, you know, work for them. And actually that was a big character moment and plot point from the 1998 David Hasselhoff Nick Fury Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. film. That, you know, that's kind of interesting to see that they still are being true to their roots with that. We talked about the Skrull alphabet. Oh, and then Akilah disappeared while raiding in the explanation of, you know, where she was and what was going on and how she, you know, fell out from S.H.I.E.L.D. and all that. She was disappeared while raiding one of Von Schott's gulags. And in the very first episode, the pilot, Ward, was actually stealing the Chitauri neural link from Von Schott. Mm-hmm. So that's an interesting, you know, why did this guy have the Chitauri stuff? So maybe we're going to see him come back at some point in a future episode as well, which would be interesting.
Yeah, maybe he's, you know, maybe he's the guy responsible for her, or maybe it's the other way around. He's the guy that's got the in on all the alien stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, whoever, you know, I don't know, maybe somebody else was after that stuff too. And, you know, in the conflict, they got her and, you know, brought her on board. I don't know.
Yeah.
There's so much. There's so much, and we're so early on. We don't see the big picture yet.
Right. And but the great thing is that there seem to be so many different threads here that now we can start pulling from this episode. You know, who's this who's the mysterious group or person behind these neural or these eye implants that are, you know, spying on everybody? What's with the writing on the board and who wants to steal it and why did they have it in the first place? And then we've also got the fact that Graviton can come back at some point from the asset episode last week with him falling into the Gravitonium, which
right.
Actually, if you'll indulge me for a second here, we got an email in from listener Pedro, and he titled it Black Hole Sun. And he said, hey, guys, regarding the Gravitonium, I have great theory as to why it wasn't put on the slingshot. If you listened last week, we were saying, you know, why did they not just get rid of this? It seemed really dangerous, but they decided to put it, you know, in a vault and just make it disappear. He said, obviously, if you dropped Gravitonium into a star-sized mass, you'd be at significant risk of creating a black hole. Do I get a no prize? Well, Pedro, you absolutely do get a no prize, and we will be sending that no prize out to you as soon as humanly possible. So look for that in the mail. And he said, keep on trucking. So we will keep on trucking in our bus or with Agent Mac at the wheel, I guess, if that is the case. I love that guy.
I want to see, you know, you got to have more Agent Mac. That was a great surprise. That was a cool little moment. I was not expecting that.
Yeah, I definitely hope he comes back for some color, I think, in future episodes, even for just a couple minutes.
Doesn't have to be a big character. He can just be driving something else or just doing whatever. That's a great point, Pedro, because that was a question in my head too. Why didn't they, you know, we already saw what S.H.I.E.L.D. does with stuff that we shouldn't have, and they didn't do that. Yeah. It was it's an interesting theory. I'd be curious to see what happens with the potential return of Graviton. So
yeah, that will definitely lead to future storylines. And I think, as I said last week, if that ever comes to fruition, I think Coulson really needs to watch his butt, because I mean, I don't know how you defeat something like that, where a guy, you know, that's the thing. It's like they're going to be up against these characters, and the Avengers, you know, to some level, they are so much above where the characters on our show are. If you just think about like Thor and Iron Man and the Hulk and stuff, and the power levels of these people, and you kind of saw it with the Black Widow in Avengers, where she's trying to evade the Hulk, and all she can do is just get out of the way, right? Yeah, just run. But I mean, what's going to happen when the S.H.I.E.L.D. team here on the show is presented with a character that is of, you know, that monumental kind of power? You know,
you got to call Captain America. This will be the April, you know, 30th episode. This will be May. It'll be a May episode. It'll be like one of the season finale. We get this guy, and he's about to, like, you know, rip Coulson apart with some like gravity, whatever. And then all of a sudden you got, you know, Cap jumps in and puts his shield out in front and, you know, deflects it all. It'll be a great moment. It'll be a 5-second cameo. And he's like, well, I'm off to do something else, you know?
Yeah. From your lips to Joss Whedon's ears, man. Yeah. That'd be awesome.
He listens. So. He was tweeting about that earlier.
Oh, yeah. I know. I hope he's listening to the show here, because we've got great ideas, and, you know, we'd love to, we definitely want to keep talking about this for many years to come. But right now, that's all we have for this week's episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files.
If you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to leave feedback on iTunes. You can contact us by emailing shield@randomchatter.com, and also reaching out on Twitter at Agents Podcast, and the Facebook page, facebook.com/agentspodcast.
And you can also check out the other show that Josh and I do, which is called Green Justice and Arrow Podcast, following the TV show Arrow, which is also available on the Random Random Chatter's network at randomchatter.com. And Chris, you've got at least one show, S'more Geek.
Yeah.
But you have a new show, I think you've been talking about.
Yeah. So S'more Geeks is our weekly show that breaks down everything that's happening in the world of geek, from video games, comics, movies, TV, that kind of stuff. And that's every week. And then we just launched a brand new show called Movie Crash. And it's a show we're doing twice a month where we take a movie and we break it down, but we're picking very specific movies. This week we did The Core from 2003.
Oh, yeah.
With Aaron Eckhart and Hilary Swank. It's not a particularly great movie, but it sure is fun to watch and kind of make snark comments about.
MST3K style.
Yeah, a little bit. You know, it's not a commentary per se, but it is a discussion, not dissimilar from shows like this, where we have discussion points and we talk about stuff that doesn't make sense, or that were the funniest parts of it, the good stuff, the bad stuff. It's like, you know, you go watch a movie and then come listen to us and be among friends.
Cool.
So right now the first episode is up at smoregeeks.com and also on the S'more Geeks feed. But the next one is going to come out at the end of the month, and we're doing The Evil Dead.
Ooh, I love Evil Dead. The first one, right?
The first one, yes, the original.
Very cool. And that's at S'more Geeks, S'MORE Geeks.
Yes. And, but there's no apostrophes on the website.
But there's no apostrophe on the website.
That doesn't exist. Yeah, it's just smoregeeks.com. And we're also on iTunes and Stitcher and Downcast and, you know, anywhere you get podcasts, you can find us there.
Cool. We'll have a link up on our show notes for anybody that's interested as well.
Cool.
And if you enjoy this podcast, please be sure to tell your friends about us. So for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files, this is Jay.
And this is Chris.
Signing off from Level 7. This podcast is not endorsed by ABC Television or Marvel Entertainment. The official website for Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. can be found at www.agentsofshield.com. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and related elements are copyright Marvel Entertainment, LLC.
Transmission terminated.